any research into...
Ace, is it 5 o'clock yet?
For the actual property owners?
I'll make you official timekeeper.
I know. I couldn't see the PowerPoint up there.
These seats are like taboo.
They are. Something about being out there.
I'm going to start auctioning them off.
You're supposed to take a
shower.
Right. It's not
your group. Probably what it is. I stink, don't I, Liz? Damn. They changed cologne.
It is the first of the year.
I wore a night in the barnyard just for you.
Two people out of 5 o'clock.
Eric. 5.
Okay, it's 5 o'clock. I'd like to call the grants meeting to order. Roll call. Liz Dalton.
Here.
Erica Harris.
Present.
Judy Kuhn.
Present.
Bruce Malone.
Here.
Bill Meyer.
Here.
Stacy Pace.
Here.
Victor Valentine called, said he won't be here because of illness. Denise Wehart.
Here.
And I am present. First, I'd like to welcome everybody to a new year and start of another year of lovely grants meetings. Moving on, approval of the minutes from the November 1st, 2021 Grants Committee meeting. I have one change I'd like to see made. It says motion to, under bills and purchases, requests and resolutions, the second paragraph is a motion to approve made by Bruce Cooper. I think that should say Bruce Malone. Other than that, everything seems to be fine. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, Eric, looking at the November meeting, I don't know if I was there or not, but that's the one that we were talking about in the minutes.
I think you came in late, but
I think
I'm not,
I did too.
I'm not.
So you can mark me present.
Huh?
You can mark me present.
Does it mark Judy present?
Yeah. For the November meeting? Yeah.
It says that you're present.
And I was at the meeting.
No, there was one that was, one's November, one's, oh wait.
I'm looking at November.
There's November
first.
Revised, and Judy is on that one.
Yeah, the revised version and, says you're
present. Oh, okay.
Bill, you're on the revised
Bill's
as well.
On, okay. Present on the revised.
Okay.
But on the revised, it also still states that was motion was to approve made by Bruce Cooper. I think that should say Bruce Malone.
And which page is that again?
First page. Any other questions or comments? One of those is approved. Moving on, public comments. Do we have anyone from the Leadership Council? No one's here from the Leadership Council. Moving on. Moving on to bills and purchase reports. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Liz, second by Mr. Meyer. Roll call, Liz Dalton.
Yes.
Erica Harris.
Yes.
Judy Kuhn.
Yes.
Bruce Malone.
Yes.
Bill Meyer.
Yes.
Stacy Pace.
Yes.
Denise Wehart.
Yes.
And I'll be voting yes. Thank you. Moving on, we have a resolution authorizing a grant for yearly funding to the Madison County Soil and Water Conservation District fiscal year 2022 from Building and Zoning Committee. Any discussion, questions, or comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve. I'm sorry, Joe. Motion by Mr. Meyer.
Second.
Second by Ms. Kuhn. Roll call. Liz Dalton.
Yes.
Erica Harris.
Yes.
Judy Kuhn.
Yes.
Bruce Malone.
Yes.
Bill Meyer.
Yes.
Stacy Pace.
Yes.
Denise Wehart.
Yes.
And I'll be voting yes.
I think that second was, it wasn't me. I thought you said Mrs. Kuhn.
It was Liz.
It was Liz, wasn't it?
Or Denise.
Second was Liz Dalton.
Oh, I thought you said Mrs. Kuhn.
If I did, I should have been Liz Dalton. Moving on. We have public meeting consolidated annual performance report, CAPER, report to U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development regarding CDBG and home expenditures in fiscal year 2020 and fiscal year 2022, Annual Action Plan, seeking input on community need regarding the allocation of CDBG and home funds that we've outlined in the fiscal year 2022 Annual Action Plan, an application that will be submitted to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and fact sheets. Is there someone here that would like to make some comments on this? Walt?
I would defer to Ms. Messinger.
Okay, well, first of all, is the draft CAPR submission and fact sheet. This is our annual report to HUD. This is just a real quick outline of how we've spent both CDBG, Community Development Block Grant, and home funds through our fiscal year 2020, which was October 1st, 2020 to September 30th, 2021. So the second page is probably the most important of all. It gives you a good outline of what we've done. We've used our dollars for CDBG and home to rehabilitate 76 housing units. We've assisted 21 or 30 different households with first-time home buyer.
I'll come down and get it for us. I'm sorry.
We've helped with 11 different public facility projects. Six of them they're listed here, sewer and water. We've had some street projects, as well as we've assisted three different fire departments through Madison County to get fire equipment. We've also conducted over almost 3,000 code enforcement inspections with the City of Granite City and Alton. And we've helped the City of Granite City with serving a dispatcher that's helped over 33,000 individuals throughout Granite City. And overall, throughout Madison County, we've conducted 33 demolitions to date. So one of the requirements for HUD for these dollars is to go ahead and present the draft action plan, and that's what we're doing, and we just have to seek public input for those. And you're just wondering if you guys had any comment on any of those items.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
On the home buyer program.
Yes.
Do they pay that back? Is that?
Well, the home buyer program is a 5-year forgivable loan. So if they're in the home for 5 years, it converts to a grant. If anywhere in that time they sell, the old prorated amount. So if they sold in year two and a half, they would owe half the money back from the proceeds of their home. And we would get that from closing as program income, which we would reinvest back into CDBG and most likely do more home buyer in home. We would most likely do more home buyers with it.
Do you remember if that was pretty spread through the county or those 21? We assisted?
That is pretty much spread throughout the county. The 9 that it appears before the 21 figure, that is all in Alton, and they use their community development block grant funds, CDBG, to do those so that they can do more. So, but it's a pretty wide variety. So, yep. And that is the 80% area median income, so they can help higher income people. About $46,000 is the annual income for a family of four. So, any other?
When we're talking about these funds, is it strictly the funds that we had prior to the COVID funds that should help? Or does this include some?
Right now, these are pre-COVID dollars, or not COVID dollars. Specifically for the home buyer, we wouldn't be able to do homeowner assistance for down payment. We could do mortgage assistance, but this is for just regular CDBG.
Any other questions or comments?
I do have another part of it, too.
Jenny?
Part two. I have another fact sheet for
the community need. This is a little two-pager. And we are also starting the grant writing process for our 2022 CDBG and home grants. We're anticipating, because there's no federal budget yet, having a little over $3 million projected for CDBG and just under $1 million for home funds. So what we do is we need to get community input on how the committee community feels we should spend these dollars. And some of the eligible means are listed at the bottom: housing rehabilitation, new construction, basic needs for seniors, public facilities, housing. But what we're looking for right now is your input if you really see a need in the community where we really should consider spending these dollars at. I know when we usually hear every year is that we need housing for larger, more affordable housing for larger families. That's often one. We often have a need for daycare facilities for the second and third shifts for lower income people. That's always a big one. But those are some of the kind of ideas that could be something you're seeing a need for in your community that we might be able to use CDBG or home dollars to assist in filling the gaps for. Well, at this time, for this right here, no. However, we're getting more information about our home ARP funds, and one of the ways we could use it is roughly $3.5 million would possibly be to build a homeless shelter. So that could be something. It's got to be to help homeless people within Madison County, but that's probably one of the only ways in the foreseeable future we could ever build a new shelter. But we'll be coming back to the committee with another public meeting on community need for those specific dollars.
How many homeless shelters are there that in the county that are affiliated with, you know, their nonprofit?
Well, we've lost many homeless shelters over the last couple, probably 5 years. We have the Alton Salvation Army, which is now operating as a hybrid model.
Transition, right?
Yeah, they, because of COVID, they, well, a couple reasons. Because of COVID and because they have an old walk-up, 2-3-story home.
The booth actually, house is a mess. I don't think they'll go back, COVID or not.
No. It's not ADA compliant. If they have anybody with any kind of disability, they can't stay there because they can't walk up the stairs. But they are actively trying to figure out a model. Right now they're in hotels, but they really would like to see another model. So they would be a very good candidate to possibly build a new shelter with these dollars. We also have the Good Samaritan House, mm-hmm. and that reopened in Granite City.
Yeah.
It's for women and their children. Mm-hmm. And then we also have the Oasis Women's Center in Alton as well. Mm-hmm. That's a domestic violence shelter. But we are seeing, they're always full. All of the shelters are always full, so there is definitely a need.
Did you say old folks? Or no,
whenever
you
said they're always full.
Pardon?
The shelter is always full.
Well, whenever you said they couldn't walk up the steps on the one in Alton, is that because of the condition of the building or because of people?
No, a person could be disabled and can't walk up the stairs.
I'm sorry?
ADA.
Oh.
There's no elevator.
Okay.
It's literally a house.
Yeah, it's a great big old house on a corner.
Yeah. And I mean, it's old, so not only is there no elevator, but the stairs are the old stairs, which are steeper, so mm-hmm. they're not in compliance. So there's just a lot of issues there. Not only that, I mean, one of the other issues is, let's say a bedroom has 4 beds in it. They'll fill the beds, the 4 beds,
mm-hmm.
but not everybody in that shelter or in that particular bedroom will be related. They want to move from that type of model to kind of almost like a little pod, like an apartment, not an apartment, but more like a hotel room. So who's ever in that room is all related,
mm-hmm.
and not just filling the beds. So, I mean, they had to move away from that because of COVID. They wanted everybody in the more immediate family to be housed in a room, so that's why they went to a hotel model for right now. But like Bruce said, I don't think they're going back to that facility because it's got, I mean, it's rough.
Yeah,
it's really rough.
It'd be stupid to put money in this.
Yeah. I mean, all the money in the world isn't going to fix it. So, they're seriously, they want to demo that building and build a new facility there at the site if possible, but...
And are they looking for us to pay for that and then they run it?
Or well,
we're not getting in the business, right?
So for the home ARP funds, when we would get into that, it would be a one-time thing. So if we helped them, assisted them with financing to build it with those grant dollars, whoever the dollars would go to would have to show the means to be able to run it. So it's just an assistance to give the infrastructure. We can't run the infrastructure. Does that make sense? So we're not opening a shelter. We would be granting somebody the money to, we would build the shelter for essentially, and they would run it. But there's, we've got to figure out a lot of things. They've got to be a member of our continuum of care, active member, and they would have to meet certain benchmarks throughout an application process, which we would probably have a competitive process for. We wouldn't just be like, hey, here's some money. Good luck with that. So,
I think your biggest problem is going to be NIMBY, not my backyard, because there have been people working in Alton about doing homeless shelters and churches, and there's been a great deal of resistance to that.
And we've, and I don't know where he was here, Dave, we've realized we have a bigger homeless problem in Collinsville, too. And I mean, there is a NIMBYism problem in Collinsville as well. But unfortunately, that is where we do have, we're seeing a large homeless population. So right now, a lot of them are sleeping in the police station at night to stay warm. So did I miss anything on that one, Dave? Yeah, Dave Kerr is our homeless person. Well, he's not homeless, but he helps the homeless. So.
Cool.
Right, right. He coordinates the homeless. So, any comments on the need you see potential use for with these dollars?
No, maybe just two comments. Okay. One is, I get that we have to be ADA compliant now with new rules and stuff, but if we could also just be mindful of red tape that... You know, if I'm sleeping on the street, I might not care if I'm also in a room with a stranger. You know, I don't know that that's our call to make, but...
Well, it wasn't our call to make. We didn't, just to be fair, we, Madison County, didn't put an end to that. That was the model that the Salvation Army is going with. And you're right, probably. But I think a lot of that driving force to do it now was COVID. So... And I get what you're saying, but yes. But we did not make the call to say, no, you can't do that. However, we did give them money and a very generous line item to go ahead and fund people and put them up in hotels through our ESG or Emergency Shelter Block Grant. So.
And then the second comment, which is not really related, but so I noticed we had paid for a dispatcher from Granite City. Was that similar to what we are taking on with Highland now?
No. Well, I'm not familiar with the Highland situation, but back in 2001, the city of Granite City had a hardship, financial hardship, and we had to get special permission from HUD for them to fund one dispatcher there. And it's because they are a entitlement city that they're able to do it. If they wouldn't be an entitlement city, we wouldn't be able to fund it. But But if any of the situations change, or let's say they lost their call center and that went away, they would never be able to refund that through CDBG funds again. So.
Any other comments? Hearing none, moving on. The next item has been pulled from the agenda. So we are up to administrative reports. My favorite part, employment and training. Tony, you're up.
Thank you. So you've received a written report with the agenda. Unemployment rates stayed pretty consistent. Madison County was 3.6% in November. I would anticipate the December numbers we see next month will be pretty similar. The interesting figure will be when we see January, which I report in March. Historically, you see increase as people get laid off from the seasonal jobs with the holidays, but with the labor shortage, I'm not sure we'll see that this time. So it'll be interesting to see the January numbers and where we're at. A couple other things going on, projects. We didn't meet in December, but in November 16th, we held our regional apprenticeship event for Apprenticeship Week at the Gateway Convention Center in Collinsville. We had about 110 attendees. We recognize the 14 businesses in our region, our nine-county region, who have apprenticeship programs. We have about 123 current apprentices in these programs. The state requirement for the grant that they received was 800, so we've got a majority. We have more businesses than most regions have apprentices at the moment, so we've been very successful with the apprenticeship program. So we're planning a series of roundtable events, again, each at Gateway Convention Center. The City of Collinsville has been a very good partner providing space. The first one we'll be having is April 5th with supply chain and logistics, a growing industry in our region. May 12th, we will deal with healthcare, and then throughout the year again, October is manufacturing month, and then again in our November with apprenticeships. So a series of those throughout the year. We'll provide information as it becomes available, invite you to attend any or all of those. Our alternative digital credential project, or the badging project with SIU, we're currently working on a proposal with several St. Louis regional entities for the Good Jobs Challenge. It's a federal grant available specific to the biotech industry and healthcare. So we've been meeting weekly and looking forward to submitting that in early February to see where we go. Supply chain project, we have put our employer advisory board together. Their first meeting was December 7th, discussed our short-term training program. They're on board. We're looking to do our first short-term training class beginning in late January. The grant calls for us to train 200 incumbent workers over the next several months, looking to do classes of 25. First class in January, we reached out to just the advisory board, and we have one employer wanting to send 12, another four, so we're pretty quickly filling up our first class. Pretty excited about that. In your document, or in your packet also, was our results from program year 2020, which is July 1 of 20 through June 30th of 21. Some points. You can see the average wage for our adult program, which are individuals who are low income, was $24.30 for those people who went into employment. I will tell you that's driven by health care, dental hygienists. We're seeing a lot of interest in that. Something interesting, the last several years with dislocated workers, people who are laid off looking to go back, those figures have been in the mid-20s. This year it was only $18.08. I think that's a direct reflection on we've run out of people going back to work at U.S. Steel and the higher wages that they were getting at U.S. Steel that fit into that category. Someone who loses their job is looking for more short-term training, and because of that, you see a lower wage than someone who's in a longer training program. We began a social media blitz November 1st. If you go on to any of the four social media sites we have, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram, you'll see daily posts trying to emphasize our programs, get the word out to people, with the tagline, "Did you know that?" I can tell you we've had success. We have 16 new participants since November 1st. If you remember last year, we had issues. We did not hit some of our spending that we needed to hit. That's not going to happen this year, so we're being very aggressive. We also have developed a TikTok account, and we have a couple things out there. Not my generation TikTok, so that's all I know. All I know is the TikToks I get from my daughter are drunk people missing chairs or people falling down or something. So it's not that, but we're trying to reach out to young people where they are, quite honestly. So, I mean, it's just a matter of our staff doing everything internally. So not on your list, but 2022 is going to be a year at employment and training for increased accountability. We have a staff meeting on Wednesday where we're introducing a number of KPIs. We had one-on-one meetings with staff and determined that the big measures that the state and the federal government put on us, our staff do not know. So we've broken them down into KPIs for their various departments and what they do. So we'll be doing that also. We're looking at standard operating procedures, putting together things on paper, because last year we had a big turnover and we feel the need for that. We've got some people who've been there a long time getting ready to retire probably in the next couple years in some pretty important areas, and we need those documents down. And we're looking at process mapping, how we do things, how can we improve client flow, what we do, how we do it. So that's it, sir.
That's it. And you're awful short this month. We gave you an extra month to prepare, too.
Yeah, it's a whole sheet's worth, so I just talk faster, I guess.
Thank you, Tony. Moving on. Community development. Walt, what you got for us?
I have a couple items for you. In front of you is Madison County Community Development Active Projects. But before I highlight those, I just want to say that the Alliance STL, I did not provide you an update because they did not provide me an update, but I do want to mention two projects that we're working on with Alliance STL. Those projects are Project Green Dream. We had a meeting in this room in the middle of December with the principal from the company, and we worked through some issues. Our team, when I say our team, DCEO, as well as the other resource providers, Mr. Furman was on the call as well, feel that we are in a very competitive position to win that project. This will go in Gateway. So we should know shortly if we've won that project. Right now, it's coming down to a timing event. Ameren has to provide a transformer, and if Ameren provides a transformer in the middle of December, it will not arrive here for another year, 14 months. So we're pushing against their timeline. However, our site in Madison County, we feel is more competitive than the site they're looking for at in St. Louis. So we are in a good position. They have increased their investment amount. The company has also talked with the landowner, so that's a good site. So we're just waiting to hear back from them whether we won the project. Another project that we're working on with Alliance STL is Project Penny, and that goes into the energy project that you see on your sheet in front of you. We are moving ahead. The Village of Glen Carbon is moving ahead. We're putting this on their agenda to extend the boundaries of the enterprise zone, as well as providing tax abatement for those projects. So there are other hurdles that we have uncovered in Project Penny. I don't know, I'm not going to give a false illusion, but I believe we can work with them. There are some difficult issues, but the village is moving forward to extend the enterprise zone and provide tax abatement. After the village approves their resolution to extend and offer benefits, I will be reaching out to the other taxing bodies to get them on board as well. On the sheet in front of you, the Madison County Community Development Activity Report, I've already talked about Project Energy. Project Sugarloaf is a new project that Dave and I talked to the principals, and they're offering three buildings where a company can own them. We do not have this product in our marketplace where you can actually own the land as well as the building. A lot of our projects are lease hold improvements So that's this sign right there. They recognize that there's an opportunity in the market, and they're offering this up on Wanda Road. Plum Street, you should be familiar with Plum Street. We have issues that are providing that out to be bid on. And we should know sometime at the beginning of next month who is interested in that property. On your next page, Stevenson's Building Redevelopment. Again, they are requiring the market to use the whole funds. And lastly, the three items at the bottom. Hopefully you start recognizing that this is a lot of development occurring in Madison County. Precoat Meadows and Granite City. I explained to several people earlier before the start of the meeting, they were not aware of our enterprise zone and our benefits. And after spending the morning trying to get to the proper person, we finally got a hold of them, and their expression was, I never knew about them. So it was unbelievable. Now they are connected. They are grateful for my assistance. I'm not patting myself on the back, but they're like, wow, we did not know this.
And who got fired at Precoat?
Well, what I wanted to hear was, we can do more. That's the operative word. We can do more now. So it's the same thing that happened with the person to finish. We did something with them, provided them a subordinated data instrument. Wow, we built a bigger building. So this helps everyone around. Wheeland Roll Products, that's all in brass, $200 million new investment. And Exeter announced 2 weeks ago that they will finally start construction on their second building. This is just west of their existing facility. So this has 810,000 square feet to $1.1 million. What I want you to know about this, when you see these numbers, like that, that's $37 million in new investment, minimum. I'll repeat that. That's a $37 million investment. So we're really excited about that. But as I indicated when I worked for the city of Evansville, we're running out of land in Evansville. We're running out of land in Gateway. So there's other opportunities that we need to pursue. I'll be working with Chris Otto, Dave Tanzius, to make sure that we can capture that right there. But I do not want, just like you, do not want this gravy train to
come to him.
Go away. Are there any questions?
Well, can I back you up? And the community of Sunnybrook, I've been kind of out of the loop on that lately. Do they have their full funding now to continue with that?
Not to my knowledge at this time.
Yeah,
we're working with them. Lisa is and I were on a call with them. And we have to redo our environmental for that, for our portion of that. But to my knowledge at this time, no.
Are the laborers still involved with that?
I am not sure.
Okay. Thank you.
And also, I want to thank several members of the grants committee. They're helping and connecting with the right people in the right communities. So, again, thank you publicly. I appreciate that. That makes my life easier.
Mr. Babcock, you have a comment?
Yeah, well, you had mentioned that we're running out of land. I know Edwardsville encompasses a large spectrum of land, but maybe it's unincorporated. Were you talking about were you talking about incorporated?
That's correct. Yeah. In Edwardsville proper. Right,
I got
there.
You. Yeah.
Where Gateway is located. Again, that's one of that is the highest performing enterprise zone.
Gotcha.
We do have an additional 300 acres. We do know the on ramps, Mr. Wheeler, and he wants that land to be included in the next round of the expansion of the enterprise zone. But we do know of at least two other projects that are million square foot buildings wanting to go in that area.
Gotcha.
So we're running out of space. There's one more space for one more 1 million square foot building, and we're waiting for the rules to align for that to happen.
I just want to make a proposal. You can bring it towards Bethalto if you'd like, Walter.
Our properties and all, we've got all that transportation or whatever.
I was thinking Highland.
Bring it to Clark Properties along Broadway and all. We got all that infrastructure there.
What we're doing on our website, we're going to make sure that everyone knows about where this land is available. That's one of the issues right there. Cynthia Ellis and I are working together to develop the website that's going to highlight the communities. And we've already reached out to the different mayors about how to sell themselves, how to present themselves, and how to position themselves. We cannot do that. But Golfo, to day one, has done a magnificent job. You look on the website in regards to describing who they are and why they are attractive to a certain population. I need other communities to do the same.
And I was at a presentation that Walt did with Alton Works, and he emphasized all this stuff. And he's doing a really impressive job with that stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
Anybody else have any questions? Moving on. 2022 Grants Committee meeting schedule. You should have that on a page in front of you.
Yeah. I know it's pretty far out. And we probably beat them to the punch with this committee, but the IT committee at our last meeting decided that we were going to start meeting on the first Tuesday at 5 o'clock, as we're doing tomorrow. So if we're moving to Tuesdays on the 5th and 6th, we're going to conflict with that. Or they're going to conflict with us, whichever way you want to look at it. But
we'll just throw them out. So we can look at that further down the road.
We're meeting tomorrow at 5 o'clock, the IT. We changed the time and the day.
We could possibly see if Tuesday at 4 o'clock is available.
4 o'clock?
I believe that's when personnel is.
Of course it is.
Well, I don't.
Maybe we can do 3 o'clock.
You may have this already penciled in, and IT doesn't, because we tend to kind of jump around, you know.
And, okay, you know, I'm not sure if Nadine had already officially had it locked in, so.
Well, that came to my attention because just last month we agreed that, okay, we're going to go to 5 on the first Tuesday. We were having trouble getting meetings scheduled with holidays and running into other people's meetings.
Okay, we'll see if we can work out a conflict-free time zone.
Any other questions on the meeting schedule? Moving on, presentation on the 2020 census for St. Louis metro area and Madison County. Mr. Otto, you're up.
Sure. If you'd like to get a better seat, so you can see the screen better.
I can see.
Okay. So chairman had attended a August meeting of East-West Gateway. We received this presentation, and there's some additional information in here. Then he sent me back to find some more out with some questions, and we actually have a director of research there who has a lot of information, and enlisted John Parkin to help me out based on his education background. So basically, there's a census every 10 years, 2010, 2020, and scheduled for 2030. There's also an annual survey, which is a sample, and then there is an estimate based on the records they have. So this only shows that there's like a 3,200 count difference actually to the good for us, Madison County. It's not unusual, they're all off by some. Okay, from 2010 to 2020, pretty much across the region, there were losses except certain areas like St. Charles, Jefferson County, minor increase. Some Missouri counties and Monroe had a minor increase. Otherwise, we lost 3,400 people from 2010. This gives the same information in a bar graph. So you can see the differences. The metro area grew by growth. We actually lost people. St. Clair did worse, and the city of St. Louis did worse. This shows a trend since 1950. There was a modest increase for us until about 1970, and then we really leveled off. The only counties have gone up since 1970 are St. Louis County and St. Charles County. This shows trends since 1900. had steady growth again until 1970. You can see that it steepened during the 20s and leveled off in the 30s during the Depression. And then post-war, it just took off until it kind of stopped in 1970. This shows that, in general, we have an aging population in Madison County, and deaths crossed over births in about 2017. This shows the red shows the population leaving, the green shows the influxes. And that specifically shows Madison County. You've got people leaving Granite, Alton in between, growth along the 159 corridor. There's some loss, Collinsville, part of Collinsville in the county, and over by Helvetia Township. This is our ranking. We're 21st. I think we used to be around 13th in the 80s. So St. Louis has dropped steadily. And we're 47th for growth, ahead of Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Hartford. Walt, is that important for what you do?
Okay. I want to highlight this slide right here because when site selectors and consultants look at our region, they're looking at our ranking. So if these numbers don't alarm you, like they alarm me, we're not doing our job. To fall any further, we could be ignored moving forward. So what is the alternative? Well, we need to find people to move into our community. I know our department is looking to build homes, get people to move into it, but I don't want to sugarcoat this, Chairman Foster. It will be dire if we fall any further off of that. Back in the day, I can say at this part right here, Louisville, Kentucky, merged all of their metropolitan areas. This is in 2000. They went from 79th to 16th. I don't know where they're at right now. But by becoming 16th, they got a lot more press. They got a lot more notice. And a lot of businesses moved in to the area because of that, because of that population. And forget, correct me if I'm wrong, Anthony, is he still here?
I'm here.
Okay, sorry. Our workforce has got $1.5 million, 1.5 million people living in our immediate area, is that correct? Or work in our Madison County?
Yeah, that's pretty close, I think. So.
So we still have that going for us, so not as dire as this may seem, we still draw, according to Mr. Furman, a good amount of people from across the river. But if we continue to fall, we're going to have issues. Yes?
kind of a stupid question here, but not that long ago, Amazon was casting around looking for a new... Amazon, I think it was looking for a new hub. And I don't know how serious any bid locally was trying to track them here. I got the impression watching the media and reading that they really didn't even look at the area. And so is that kind of situation like what you're explaining here where if you're not?
Yes and no. When Amazon came, they did their own studies. We were in Unilever. Has done a study recently as well, because Unilever just leased a 762,000 square foot building in Lakeview this time last year. And when Unilever was looking at an area, they were also looking at Waynesville. We compare much better than Waynesville, Missouri. So our labor studies, when Amazon and others conduct labor studies, we are still out ahead of everyone else. But if we continue to lose population, that's going to be an issue. Now, Amazon is not just, we have four Amazon plants in Madison County, four. And
they felt comfortable, 1,200 employees, 2,400 employees, 800 employees, I don't know what the other one is, but they felt comfortable coming here without raising their wage rate. So that says a lot, but again, how long will that last? Right now, we're looking for ways to get the population from North County to Madison County. The chairman has given us the key to build book to make this happen, because if we don't find employees to feed our industry, this could drive pretty fast. But the population numbers concerns us. I appreciate Mr. Otto bringing this up so that everyone can understand what we're up against.
I would use Indianapolis as an example. Especially in the supply chain area, that was a hot market. No one's looking there anymore because they feel like they've tapped the entire workforce. So I agree with Walt. We don't want that to happen here. Yeah. St. Charles County has a number of those type of facilities still coming in. So anything we can do, I agree. North St. Louis is a key to get people from North St. Louis to Gateway and the other areas there.
Am I correct to assume that there's currently we're working with MCT trying to get new routes to establish new routes from North St. Louis just for
the board? But I started when I was on the board, and the continuous problem we faced is the shifts.
That's an issue.
They don't have 7 to 3, 3 to 11. They may call people in at 3 o'clock in the morning. And,
there's like 24 different start and end times.
Yeah. That's the problem we were talking about.
Aren't they building a hub or facility there just for the warehouse workers?
So
my understanding?
A plan from a couple years ago as well. They had money to build a transfer station. So the plan is to bring the big buses in, let people off, have some place where they can be inside and warm, because now they all sit out on the rocks and everything waiting for the buses to come through. Put them on the shuttle buses, which makes it a little more effective for MCT to get the big buses in and out as opposed to having them wind through.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's we started talking about that about 3 years ago,
yeah,
too.
I have been on the board for 2-3 years when that discussion started, but the problem then, I guess, is still the same problem now. You got so many screwed up work schedules that, you know, we can't keep sending 40-footers over there at 2 o'clock in the morning and there's two people to pick up.
You know, the conversation also is about bi-state. I don't know if those are ongoing as well.
Right.
So, I mean,
so what we're looking at, we have everyone at the table engaging in this conversation. We have the building owners who are not the name on the front of the building that you see. And they have an invested interest to make sure that there's a tenant in that building. And we'll be approaching them to contribute to fund a van, find some type of transportation until we can justify an MCT type of arrangement. So we're not sitting down waiting for something to happen. We're trying to make it happen. But we're engaging all the people at the table. This is how serious it is.
Yeah, the initial conversation, or the last ones I was involved with, involved the rideshare vans and trying to set something up where you have a group of individuals who work the same shift.
Get 15 people in a van.
Again, Mr. Chairman, we want to illustrate the seriousness of what you're seeing in front of us.
Thank you.
Next, Jim. So this, you want to go to the next one? Okay, so it circles the relevant data, but one curious thing they found was from 2010 to 2020, 130,000 fewer identifying as white alone or black alone, but 140,000 more identifying as multiracial. And we saw it to a lesser extent in Madison County. It was like 20,000, around 20, just under 20,000, and about 15,700. So what we deduced, what did we find out, what did we figure out, John? What did we figure out?
Well, I think since 2010, there's been a bigger interest in people learning about the genetic heritage. You know, there's a couple of Christmases there where 23andMe and other like outfits, you know, gave deep discounts for people to do testing, and I think people found that their makeup was much more complex than what people just assumed. So, and I think people's attitudes have probably changed in terms of acknowledging that heritage, which I think says a lot about the resilience of our population.
Next. All right, this shows that in general, in the Midwest, Rust Belt, except for isolated areas like Northwest Arkansas, large parts of Oklahoma, parts of Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, that pretty much zero or less growth in the majority of counties. Which is not great.
Yes. Of course, what's kind of interesting, I think, at this point is you hear a lot of anecdotal evidence in terms of the influence of COVID, people leaving cities or more densely populated areas and working online or whatever, and looking for, you know, greener pastures, literally, for kids to be able to frolic outdoors. And so, you know, we may see some really, really interesting shifts in terms of where people are living in 2030. And of course, some of that is also driven not just by COVID, but probably by politics and taxation and other, stories we hear.
Texas, Florida, Tennessee, Atlanta.
And one thing I'd like to just kind of volunteer here, certain populations within our country are not producing as many children as has been the norm. My grandfather was one of 12 kids. My father was one of 7. I was one of 4. My wife and I had 2, for example. And yet, one of the things that I don't think a lot of people understand going forward is, first off, we're a nation of immigrants, but the immigrants wanting to come here and thrive, they are, and their children will be, the workers of the future. And although, Madison County has, gone down about 3,400 people in the last decade, which is something to be concerned about, the future workforce, if we can attract people to this area with the right kind of job opportunity, will make a difference for the metropolitan statistical area, especially the Metro East. And so we need to kind of recognize that shift in terms of what the makeup is going to be of Madison County and Illinois going forward. So.
We saw this already, right?
But I did want to say something about this, and this is, as the political leaders of our county, maps like this should kind of hint where maybe the need for future resources would be because of the population moving. Okay, and maybe trying to divine, where to make the investment to make the resources available for the people who are going to tap into them the most and need them the most. That is going to be interesting and a challenge. We've seen this one before too, right?
Did we? I think we did.
Yeah. And I think this is the last.
This is the last one. Basically, there was a lot of conjecture that maybe 2020 wasn't counted as well as the previous censuses, but Madison County did better than the state average in both, and Illinois in general did better than the national average. Missouri didn't do. Missouri did around the national average. The only and St. Clair did worse, but Monroe County did much better than the national or state average. And that's it. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Ms. Harris?
Just a comment. I think it's notable what you said about looking at where the population's going for investments. And if just by a brief look there, it looks like the places we have been investing in are actually losing population. So that's notable.
Any other comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So
moved. Motion by Mr. Myers, second by Ms. Kuhn. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? We'll see you on February 7th at 5 p.m. Bruce?
Are you getting that other? Are you getting that other?
Bruce has got to sign it.
All right, cool.
He's on it.
Could you turn the projector off, please?
Good evening. Everybody. Oh.